Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
Good morning, everyone. This is the official real life, I truly mean it, no more do-overs beginning of today's podcast. It's Thursday. It's October the 5th. It's 19 days until the start of the NBA season. We are in the height of fantasy draft season now. The Brewski 150 is out. That's how you know it's fantasy draft season. I am at Dan Vespers. I'm also just Dan Vespers. Some people on the street actually call me just Dan. They don't even say at Dan when they're talking to me. And the tiny window that's a Google Meet shared into StreamYard holds within it the secret treasures of Aaron Brewski's brain. Brew, officially good morning now.
Oh, it's good to see that my brain gets to attend the show. Does my person, my body?
No, you're just a spirit.
Are you guys just using me for my brain?
I'll pump you for info. You know damn well that's my go-to move on these.
Look, my eyes are over here, okay?
I can't see them. I don't know where to look. You're just a gray blob with a tiny teal circle in the
exist?
Middle. Actually, that's a bigger question. That's a different show. That'll be our special. Maybe is this the moment when we should introduce the fact that you and I are going to be doing special secret shows this year?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, why the hell not? It's a weird-ass day. Let's just do that. So this is real. That's not a joke. Brew and I are going to be doing secret shows this season. The only way that you can get access to them is by being on the Sports Ethos mailing list. We'll have a website set up for that where you can get your email on it. We will be sending out email links to the show. There will be no other way to get the link to those shows. There will also be Brew and Dan overtime for premium subs, but the first half, at least, will be for free. But you got to give an email address. So that information on that will be coming here shortly. Again, he is Aaron Brewski at AaronBruski over on social media. Let's talk basketball since we had, everybody hates my long openings, but this one was pissing me off. I had to get some of the stuff off my chest. We're talking first round today because I think it's sort of settled in a little bit now. Do you feel similarly, Brew? I mean, we're seeing shuffling. There's like a three or four player shuffle bucket. You like that term? As a shuffle bucket in like the 3 to 7. And then there's a shuffle bucket in like 9 to 12. But overall, you're starting to see a little bit of a settling, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. Certain things like to change, you know, this week, next week.
I guess
it changes.
It's only a little bit of time
left here.
Okay. Well, what we'll do here today, and we're going to break this up with other things. We got topics to cover. But, Brew, I wanted to get your thoughts on, before we even get into the players of the first round, what is your strategy for the first round? Because I've long operated under the umbrella of you can lose your fantasy league by screwing up your first round pick, but it's very hard to win it with your first round pick. Do you subscribe to that as well?
Well, let me ask you a question before I answer your question.
Okay.
Have you ever drafted Joel Embiid?
Yes, actually, last year, and I did okay.
So how does that go with your theory? Because, I mean, if you're saying I can lose it in the first round, I mean, that's about as risky as it gets right there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, towards the end of the first, well, you've got Anthony Davis. Well, he's not in the first round anymore, technically. He's Yahoo's number 13 player. But you've got Kevin Durant, who's pretty risky in the first, right? Kyrie's mm-hmm. pretty risky in the first.
Mm-hmm.
Even Steph a little risky in the first.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you say go for it, or do you say I was a fool to do Embiid last year, even though it actually did work out? Did I just get lucky?
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely looking for not that. And it really, the first round's tantalizing, man. Like, not only do you just get screwed in the back end of the first round, like, you just do. Like, there's mm-hmm. there's no great fix. Third round reversal doesn't even do the trick there. So sometimes you're looking at bad value and bad asset. It's rough. There's about five players every year that don't fit that criteria. And I think you can probably make sure you get one of those. You might have to bite the bullet and pass on somebody that you don't like because of some of that risk. It's substantial. If your first round player goes bad, man, Talk about an uphill fight. You got to do real well.
Easy.
Rounds two through five. You gotta jump a couple rounds in that range right there. Otherwise, you're done.
What's your recommendation? Auction League?
Yeah, always. I mean, auctions are phenomenally fun. There's so much that's going on in an auction league. I swear, I can't wait till maybe one day just kind of talk about how that goes. I don't know if we'll ever really be able to get truly deep into that. I have my high stakes competition. I don't know if I'll ever be, you know, like live casting one of those things. There's just too much going on. It's an exhausting process, the auction league, but I do recommend it. But in snake drafts, I mean, you might look at passing somebody of that high value if you don't have the stomach for it. And it really just depends on the format. Like if I was in a very competitive league, like the highest end competitive leagues, I would be more apt to take the risky guy because I know I need to do really well to win. And then if I'm in a really, really easy league, I might be tempted to take that guy, you know, because I'm like, okay, I know I can make it up down the road. I guess that middle, you know, that pretty tough, very tough, but, you know, not the highest degree of difficulty, I might pass, you know, and just get a safe play.
Do you
kind of speaking to your theory?
Do you tweak that strategy based on roto versus head to head also or no?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there is a different universe of players. You know, I think I've come around on this over the years, but like a different universe of players that have a different valuation in punt builds. But at the end of the day, you know, if it's a playoff setting, you really have to that controls everything. If you have a playoff setting, you have to. Really take a look at those risky players and really understand what exactly is the risk. You know, Joel Embiid, for example, he's pretty likely to get more time down the stretch than less time. Want to save him for the playoffs.
Oh, okay. So when you said more time versus, you meant more time off.
More time off. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But then like a tank team guy, you know, like say a prior season, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, you just think, okay, the Thunder, nobody really thought they would do as good as they did last year. You know, they were kind of profiling as a tank team. You might say, oh, not a player I want in a playoff format. You know, the Portland guys this year, anybody on a bad team this year, you know, you're like, I don't know. I don't want to invest that pick in that player during playoff formats or the playoff time in head-to-head formats. So yeah, man, there's a lot of different factors in this stuff. Getting a little bit of extra value out of a risky guy, I might have somebody projected higher, you know. My ranks tend to be kind of bottom line, who am I going to take? But as we all know, you know, teams get built out certain ways. And so, you know, if somebody's really close to another player, you know, in terms of what I think their value is going to end up being, you know, you might just zig when you were previously going to zag.
So let's
format's everything.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple of guys actually that are going early second round before we kind of come back to some of the first round stuff I want to cover on today's show. Anthony Davis and Domantas Sabonis are pre-ranked two slots apart on Yahoo. One of those guys is a massive injury risk with top five, maybe even top three, possibly sometimes top one per game appeal. The other one of those guys, and I'm talking nine cat right now, the other one of those guys is much more durable, but doesn't really profile as much better than like a top 20 in almost a best case scenario. Is there a right or wrong answer to taking either one of those guys at, say, pick 14? Like, is Anthony Davis the obvious choice? Is Sabonis the obvious choice? Is it team dependent? Is it settings dependent? This type of stuff is so critical, and we ask these questions, I guess, every season, but what is the right way to deal with something like that?
You know, I got those guys on I'll give a little bit out here. I got those guys on opposite one ahead of the other in eight and one ahead of the other in nine. So that matters here. You know, Sabonis is going to handle a ton and he's going to turn it over way more than Anthony Davis.
Right.
Is what it is. But you know, Anthony Davis is, he's got that one thing going for him, and that's like last year, that fast start he had really reminded people, hey, you know, it could happen. I'm pretty down on Anthony Davis just in general. Fantasy wise, not as much, but I do think lateral quickness is going to be an issue with him, and how that manifests across the stat set, I think it's going to have actually a significant, you know, pull downward. Yeah, could he do it again? Sure. But that team, I don't think they need to rely on him quite as much. So that is one thing working against him there. And yeah, the ever-present injury risk. So for me, you know, in the area where he's actually ranked ahead of Domantas Sabonis, maybe I took a risky player with my first round pick. You know, and I'll just say this: Anthony Davis is not going to be on my teams, so I'm not having to deal with this. Yeah. But because he's going to go way earlier than I would consider taking him, so that's that. But he's, you know, if you had a risky player in round one, the only rationale for taking Anthony Davis in round two is you're shooting for the moon.
Yeah, you're playing hearts at that point.
You are, and you, that's your competition. You know, if this is the best of the best, I love it. You know, knock yourself out, go big or go home. If you can win it some other way, if you're in an intermediate league and you can win it 50 different ways, probably don't double down on a risk guy. And you know, when you, especially compared to Sabonis, like the Kings are going to do everything humanly possible to try to get that guy into some form of high-end awards discussion. Like that's, they just bet big on him. They bet so much on him. That's like a given. And this is a player that, you know, typically doesn't get injured, so
you
I
lean,
would be looking hard.
So you lean towards the safer side. I like that's kind of fun. That's actually kind of interesting to hear, because I know personally, I go back and forth on this like day to day. I'm like, all right, well, what if I end up with a pick on the turn? And we'll get to this again in a little bit. But like, there are a lot of scenarios this year where Kevin Durant and Anthony Davis are sitting there at 12, 13. Isn't that basically shooting the moon?
I mean, it's, yeah, it is. It is. Kevin Durant, I mean.
But it's so tantalizing. Like, you could get two top five guys at 12 and 13 that might play a combined 100 games. Blech.
I mean, the one thing going for Kevin Durant is that the injuries last year were so fluky, you know, in relation to what we were worried about. And they weren't really, I mean, the knee thing was not great, but by and large, not something we were hugely concerned about long term, you know. And then the ankle or the slipped foot and the water on the ground. I mean, come on, like that was crazy. So at least with KD, there's this kind of archetype of how he plays, and you know, he's not a big contact guy. You know, he's pretty good landing. You know, like the Cam Johnsons of the world go out there and just like, they like land with their head and you're like, what the hell are you doing? You know, KD's kind of graceful, elegant, you know, and you're not as worried about that.
It was funny. I thought that when he had the knee sprain, when Jimmy Butler fell into it, he was just like, I shouldn't have been standing still.
Yeah.
That's a gamer, man.
He understands like how to stay, you know, out of player contact. I think a lot of these guys are pretty like damn great at this, because I think they in the back of their head know, hey, if I'm the idiot that runs around the floor and just bumps into everybody, I could lose $200 million. I shouldn't do that. And within the way that they play, they're pretty good at getting out of the way. But yeah, no, I think it's all about measuring these risks, which ones are worth it, which ones are not. And as I tweeted last night, I don't know that this is going to be a problem. I mean, yeah, I could get hit with some of these bad draft slots in a snake draft. And that could happen at any point in time. It's really depressing when that happens, by the way. you know, you're at a high stakes league and it comes back. It's like,
yeah, you got one. It's in one
moment,
too. I don't
even want to say it. I don't even want to manifest
Don't
that.
Say, like, yeah. And the worst part is that, like, it happens so fast. You know, it isn't like, there's so many parts of fantasy that can leave you high or low, but they all have like some sort of weird countdown on them, whether it's, you know, will this guy get back to me in a draft? And you're watching and you're watching and you're watching and the queue is slowly emptying with the randomizer or the draft order. It's like,
oh,
that's it.
There it is.
That's it.
It happens in 30 deep too. Like in 30 deep, you see, oh yeah, I'm nowhere near the top pick. That's not going to work
yeah,
out.
You're cooked at that point.
And then I'm surrounded by sports ethos guys. Oh, that's not going to work out.
Yeah.
Hey, Panda, stop taking my players, man.
Two-time champ in like the last 4 years, Panda, right? You beat me
it's
in the finals.
It's not fair, nor is it right, because we share all the same intel.
Yeah. Well,
it's not cool.
But you should be proud, though. Your two proteges were in the finals last year. Panda beating up on my poor team that was missing Durant and Porzingis during the 30 deep finals.
It is fun to see sports ethos dominate that.
That was fun. That was good. I wanted to win if I had one or even or both of those guys healthy. But you know what? That's the way it goes. And I drafted injury prone guys. So obviously that's at least partially on
you're
me.
Shooting for the moon,
I
man.
I shot the
you
moon.
Gotta.
It worked a
if
long time.
If you're playing against 30 teams or 29 other teams, you got to shoot for the moon.
Mm-hmm. I don't want 12th place out of 30. I want either like dead last or first, and that's kind of where I went. And I got all the way to the damn finals, but then they both shut her down. Let's pivot into the actual stuff I wanted to talk about today. But we got, I don't know, I thought that discussion of like how to mediate risk was relevant because now we're just going to work our way through the list of names and get some feelings on them. It's up to you. If you would you like to go 12 to 1 or 1 to 12? Which way do you want to go?
I don't care. Yeah, no. I realized I didn't even say what that tweet was last night.
Oh, yeah. What
or
was
did
the,
I?
What was the?
No, it's that the it feels like, you know, I've been drafting with the list, you know, out there in draft land. And I don't think we're going to have the problems that we were just describing. I feel like every single player on my team is of the safe, imminent upside and overall value, you know, that they're perfect in that. It's really weird. Normally there's like risk, like real risk involved, you know, and it feels like it's coming back Milhouse.
I remember what I wanted to ask. I call it the 10th category now, and it's durability. Do you agree that durability is now officially the 10th category? I actually think you kind of, I don't want to, the way I phrased that, it framed it like you didn't believe that before. In fact, I think you are one of the strongest proponents in the fantasy space that you can handicap for missed games, at least to some degree of accuracy. It's
oh,
a hard
man.
One, but you kind of have to.
It's a tough one. It's a really tough one. And, you know, we kind of go out after we're done and look at other stuff that's out there. And man, there are some wild kind of just projections. It's like the people are really throwing darts out there. And what does that do? I don't know. You know, it really depends on the outlet. You know,
well,
how,
just
how
look at just look at the impacting. Yahoo project. Look at the Yahoo projections if you want to have a little fun.
I mean, and that's great. You know, it's great for us. I really strongly encourage everybody else to continue like projecting just random game numbers or random, you know, projection numbers. But yeah, no, it's a when you've looked at enough of this, you know, I've been looking at this stuff in depth for like 12, 13 years now, something like that. And there's a pattern. It's pretty predictable, even though it's impossible to predict, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because there's everything in the fantasy space has to operate in some sort of confidence interval. You know, you're not going to like get it nail on the head, but you can see how a player behaves. You can see what shape they're in and you can make an educated guess. And like some of them anomalous crap is going to happen. But with some guys, you can say, okay, this dude has what I like to refer to as the 10th category. And, I mean, it. You know, good example of that last year would be someone like Vooch, who played 82 games. We had a player in the league last season play 83 frickin' games in a season, and then we also have half a league playing 41. So, you know, it's not insane to have some kind of baseline on this, but yeah, I think what you say does make sense because, like, then, you can get within a certain window of what a guy's going to do, and that's relevant.
You have durability, and then you also have the overlay of situation. So everything operates on a weird sort of axis. There's another axis that's kind of strange, and it's in the same realm as like a shooting guard. You know, you're in season, and a guy's like 2 for freaking 50 or something. And gambler fallacy basically states that has nothing to do with what's going to happen next, right? And but we know that the 2-for-50 shooter is not a 2-for-50 shooter, and that guy's going to be making some shots, you know, really soon. And so, you know, you predict and so on. But then, you know, with games played, it kind of works the same way. Like, will a player who has never gotten more than 70 games played, who's in his like late, say like he's 26, 27 years old, will he actually get up an over 70? Like almost every player, I bet you there's a stat somewhere on how many players in the NBA of certain types, you know, not like the bottom feeding players, but like, you know, starting NBA players, how many of them in their career have been over 70 games at least once? It's like all of them, I'm sure. I mean, somebody's got to, you got to do it 1 year. And so you're looking at the guy and you're like, he's not going to get any younger. You know, what's the odds this guy doesn't get up and over 70? So sometimes you're looking at a player and you're thinking, man, we're going to just completely reverse this and go the other direction. But then again, it has to come back to the durability factor that you give that player anyway, you know, and there's some devil in the details there. And then what's going on with the team? You know, does the team want him to play? Does the team have other players that can kind of take the load off, you know, in certain respects? So there's a lot that goes into it, but yeah, it's very super. It's helpful in either format, if it's roto or head to head, because missing games, I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's easier to weather the storm in roto, but you still don't want your guys missing a ton of games.
No, because typically what I was about to say, and I was having a hard time trying to spit it out, was like, well, most of the time this happens at the end of the year. You know, there's more tanking, there's more resting for the playoffs. You know, bodies are worn out. You know, it's just more trouble at the end of the year. And so, yeah, no, in a head-to-head league, if you're just ignoring games played, if you're, you know, you're just going straight per game on this stuff, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble that way.
All right, let's pivot over to the board. We'll do a few names. We got other things to talk about. We'll bounce around topics a little bit today. It'll be fun. We'll start at the top. Nikola Jokic, consensus number one. How do I want to frame this question for you, Brew? Is this the year that Jokic gets dethroned? How's that for a nice framing?
It's possible. And I know that's
tell me more.
Let's talk about what that answer is. In previous years is like no, it's not going to happen. Because you're not going to bet that would happen. I think this year it's possible in at least one format. Of the eight/nine cap formats.
Yeah, is that format per game nine cat?
Well, per game's not a format, Dan.
Right, I just meant like way of measurement, means of measuring.
I'm messing with you. Yeah, no, I wouldn't really measure it in a per game way. I would measure, if we're measuring this stuff, I think you got to go totals.
Oh, interesting. Like, okay, because I was thinking there was a chance that maybe.
Let me ask you, go ahead. I had somebody out there try to like, you know, publish my ranks and like, you know, represent what I picked, and they were using per game, and my ranks aren't even per game, you know, and that was very, very not cool, by the way. You know, that was like, you know, borderline, you know, greasy stuff. But like, you how do you measure this stuff if it's any other way? I think just to talk about how a player did in a season, because you can't sit here and say, all right, this per game player was great in week 23, you know, he's great in week 22. Like, there's just no way to have any sort of you know, structure to a ranking set if you're measuring it on a per game basis.
Yeah, the hard thing there is that the deeper you get into a 12-team draft, the more important per game becomes. Because, like, for a typical 12-team league, a guy who plods along at, like, 130 and plays in all 82 games is going to have a pretty good totals rank, but in a, you know, games cap roto league, that guy's actually not that useful. Whereas on the flip side of that, if you have a first rounder playing in 82 games, that's extraordinarily helpful. Or a third rounder playing in 82 games, that's hugely helpful for your fantasy team. And so, yeah, then it's like, okay, by totals, this guy gets a bump, but it's not an artificial one. That's a legitimate, like, this guy helps my team by playing every single game kind of bump. But where is that line? So yeah, it has to be one or the other.
The line is the easy way to kind of fix that. You if you're playing in that, you know, let's say you're in a 10 team, I don't know, 13 active player league, and 130 players theoretically contribute to the score of the results, you know, and then you're seeing a plotter, you know, up at 100, you know, you can basically say in your mind, that guy was useful for some amount of the time, but not really useful in my league, you know, and then you slide it like that. But in terms of like measuring a per game, you know, using that to determine rankings, what you're pulling out of that is, did the guy actually stay on the floor? And for any game that guy's not on the floor, whether it was at the end during playoff time, which is absolutely, you know, brutal for that player's squad, or let's say it was at the beginning of the season, that player just simply didn't help your team. You know, it just was what it was. So per game ranking, you know, is very problematic if you're just sort of looking at, you know, how did people do for the season? And I think what you do with a totals ranking is you just kind of say, hey, you know, the player pool of my league that contributed towards stats was X. And those guys near the bottom, you know, they were kind of wishy-washy, you know, but in terms of pure rank, if you want to say, hey, you know, some of these guys, let's go like a high-end Kentavious Caldwell Pope, you know, but like kind of like a typical season Kentavious Caldwell Pope where he finishes at 100, you know, he was definitely the 100th best player. You know, did it help? Well, at the times he was playing as a 75, yeah, it was very helpful.
Right. You know? Yeah. And then
when he was playing at a 125, not so much, you know?
Yeah. So how do you, and there's really no way to know. You can try to ride waves to some degree, but at the end of it all, but that's the thing with a guy like KCP, I think I can make an argument that both the per game and the totals rank does tell kind of part of the story there, right?
Yeah. You can use per game to tell story. Don't get me wrong, but I just think in terms of like measuring results and outcomes, like, I mean, you just are leaving out a huge piece of the story, whereas a totals-based ranking is not leaving anything out. You know, it's there for consumption unless you, you know, really want to get hyper-focused on what did guys do in week 21, 22, and 23, which in which case you've got to measure those weeks.
Right, you know? Yeah, now you're dealing with the week-to-week variability stuff that's...
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to do a per-game ranking unless, of course, you know, you have some sort of, you know, narrative you're trying to put out there, which, you know, sometimes guys are.
Well, KD, we talked about a little bit earlier on this show, is a pretty good example of that last year, of a guy who was number 5 per game in 9-cap, but only played in 47 ball games. So by totals, he was, what, like 30-something? Which is still kind of impressive, by the way, that, 35.
He was he was cruising last year. You know, like, he was the number 2 guy.
Yep.
And just cruising, and then, you know, water on the ground, and, you know, a little tiny knee injury where he's like, I'm going to play this one very safe. And, you know, it just was what it was.
And that's why you kind of need totals, because 35 is a more accurate representation of what he brought to a fantasy team last year than 5.
Yeah.
As much fun as it absolutely is to, and I was high on Kevin Durant last year. So this is me saying, you know, I'm not like trying to clown on somebody else's pick. I'm clowning on my own pick. When he was upright, he was outstanding, but he wasn't upright enough. So he was a third rounder in that instance.
Last year was pretty brutal on that front.
So there you go. Okay, so pivoting back around to the whole Jokic, Doncic, Embiid trio going at the top of drafts, how does everything we've talked about go into your calculus on, like, I mean, I assume you're still on Jokic's consensus number 1. Have we moved off? Okay.
Absolutely. He's number 1.
But then, like, lining people up behind him already starts to get a little bit complicated, because Doncic is poor in free throw shooting in a way that other guys in the first round sort of are not. But, you know, head-to-head build kind of guy, he's a very easy player to build around because of how very good he is in 5 different categories. How do you approach the front end of your first round, where you have a pick between these guys that, you know, for Luka, you punt free throws, he's right in that top few players. Embiid has a shot this year to be the number 1 per game guy if Jokic has any kind of decline off a championship run. And, like, he went out in media day and said he didn't like the shorter off season. I know he's being a little tongue in cheek, but it is a very long playoffs. How do you approach the front end of the first round, assuming Jokic is off the board?
I mean, this is a punting question.
A little bit, yeah.
Because Doncic, in a non-punting scenario, sorry, guys, you know, value matters. You know, you can't just ignore the fact that there are deficiencies. Talking Doncic compared to Embiid, you know, it's apples and oranges in terms of overall value. So Embiid's always going to have the edge there, you know, in a non-punting scenario. But in a punting scenario, it gets way more interesting because in Doncic, A, you know what you got, and people have been playing this game for 3-4 years now, so it's you know, it's great. He's also coming into this season in great shape, and we were kind of wondering when that was going to happen. I mean, his roundness has been just standing out there for the entire time, and he's been great despite it. But catching criticism for that, you know, not winning, you know, the clock's ticking, and this is one of the best competitors in the game today. You know, this is a guy who wants to win as much as anybody in the game. And so I've been waiting for this to happen. It's supposed to happen, and it's happening this year. So you're getting peak Doncic this year. That's great. You know, and in terms of competing against Embiid, when you start to punt, now Luka he's on an equal playing field and perhaps even better, you know, than Embiid. Maybe some of that factors in Embiid's injury risk, but once you factor in the totality of Embiid's injury risk, I just like Doncic over Embiid because A, you can plan around everything super easily, but B, the theoretic difference in the health is just pointing in Doncic's favor.
The next group, what did I call it earlier? A shuffle bucket? The next shuffle bucket is currently on Yahoo, SGA, Tatum, Halliburton, Steph. Those guys have been going in some order they came out with their numbers in mid-August. So we're talking about a month and a half now. There's a lot to appreciate in here. I guess I would mention a few little sort of tangential ideas. Tatum was down at number 11 per game last season. SGA was number 3. Halliburton and Steph were in between those two guys. Looking at it, I guess more so from a per-game standpoint first, because Tatum was the guy who played more games out of that group last season. Steph missed a ton of time. Halliburton got shut down. He also had an injury mid-season. Shea was the big surprise because we all thought OKC was going to tank one more year for Wemby, and then they decided to go play hard anyway. What about on the per-game side? Forget the durability stuff with these dudes. Does anyone have an obvious edge over the others in those four?
Wouldn't you like to know?
I would like to know. Forget totals for a minute. What about just per game?
And like I said, wouldn't you like to know? I think they're all very close. We'll put it that way.
Okay. And can I squeeze something out of you in durability? How about this? Let me pose it to you in a way that doesn't give the exact order of these players out. Three of them are younger than the other one. Is the old one the one you're most worried about in durability in this group, or not as much?
You know, we've had Steph high like every year, and it's started to catch up with us in the last couple of years. And this Chris Paul thing, we have so many things this season to talk about. You know, there's so much going on in the NBA, and there's a lot of great stuff going on. I mean, it just feels like the stories are good. And one of them, especially as a Warriors fan, at the top of the list is, what's Chris Paul going to do to this team? You know, we're talking about one of the great team wreckers of all time.
If you want to talk about Chris Paul right now, let's do it, man. I love talking about Chris Paul.
Little tongue in cheek with that. But, you know, obvious, you know, first ballot Hall of Famer. And he's probably just gripping it too tight. I mean, and you can take that. You know, in most situations, like, the guy cares too much. Okay. You know, is his leadership style ineffective? Probably, you know? So he goes to a place with all the leaders. Well, not all the leaders, but these guys are the Warriors. They've won, you know? He's not going to be able to walk into the gym and just bark at people, but in a way, he will.
He will.
So we're going to watch that happen.
He will, because he and Draymond are going to be doing it together.
I that's the part I want to see. I want to see, because especially with Draymond playing such a playmaking, you know, facilitating role, and they're being plenty of that to go around on the Warriors. So who's going to take a haircut? And then Chris Paul's style is very selfishly, selfishly democratic. So he loves to pass the ball around. He loves to get assists, but it's got to be on his terms, a little bit like Rajon Rondo with that. And then you have Dre, who's really a speed playmaking kind of guy. He gets the ball, he gets up court as fast as he can most times. And then when he gets there, he kind of toggles through about 3, 4, 5, 6 different types of plays he likes to run. And he knows from many, many years playing with the Warriors that, you know, the whole key to their offense are these quick hitting, fast decision making, read and react kind of plays. And so the battle for the soul of the Warriors is going to be very interesting. And then you have Steph, who's just the nuclear weapon. So back to Steph's durability, you know, you got a guy in Chris Paul who could take so much wear and tear off of the guy. You know, it could be the case that Steph doesn't have to run 50 miles during the game. It could be the case that Steph doesn't have to cross so many different bodies going through all these different screen actions, you know, and the cumulative total of that wear and tear, you know, there's a very distinct possibility that, you know, percentage odds for durability, you know, just shifted in Steph's favor by like 20-30%. You know, these are very, you know, kind of nebulous numbers and they don't mean anything, but the totality of all of that contact might just be so much more in his favor. Working against him though, age, obviously. When you do bring in an additional star like this, you know, you can take more games off. And that could be a way to keep everybody happy. It's kind of the question that we're seeing in Phoenix is, do you see a rotation of games off? You know, you could do a game off for, you know, if I want to shift gears to Phoenix, you could do a game off for Devin Booker every 5 games or something, you know, every 6 games, you know, and just rotate that.
As long as it's not a national TV game, though.
Yeah, as long as the doctors are all on board. But, I mean, if they're doing it once every 10 games, you know, that would be 7-8 games off, you know, for a guy. And that's actually kind of optimal. You know, if you're really trying to do the load management thing, you know, 1 every 10 is not bad.
Turning back to some of these other guys in the shuffle bucket, do you think the new player... I guess it's basically just Chet Holmgren, but do you think the evolution of some of the other young players in OKC causes any kind of dip for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander this coming season? I think that's a concern for folks, or at least that's a question I've gotten.
Sure, that could be a concern.
Okay.
It's, I mean, they're good.
Yeah, they surprised a lot of teams, though. But, I mean, do you think teams... I feel like they caught a lot of teams with their pants down last season. I don't think teams are going to be pants around ankles when the Thunder come to town this season. Like, they know they're going to get a battle.
Do they, though? I don't know.
Maybe.
I think it's funny, the NBA, it's like the great measure of this is going to be the Sacramento Kings. You know, Sacramento might not have wanted to do so much dancing after victories at home with the beam. You know, and making the beam, which is great, by the way, just an amazing marketing idea. Shout out to the Kings. But like, they're on national TV this season.
People, yeah.
I mean, there's buzzy players. You know, there's players that people are afraid of.
I faded them. I faded them in my season win totals. I'm really sorry, Kings people. I know.
I have not made my choice there. I see Keegan over there looking like he's not even looking like a future all-star. I think I said this after 4 games watching him his rookie season, he is going to be a 3-time minimum all-star. Keegan Murray. He looks pretty damn yoked out. Not in a like, you know, defined kind of way. He's a big dude that moves fast and he's got a great shot and he understands the game.
Yeah.
I haven't really tapped into that. That's the one that scares me. Like I would fade it, but if Keegan gets involved the right way,
I mean a lot of what you said though, I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole because that's more of a betting discussion, but they were also the healthiest team in the entire NBA last year.
Yeah.
So there's all these things.
Everything
where it's
went
like
right.
Could
but
this...
to your point about the Thunder.
I don't think the Thunder caught
any of that last year. So it's possible that they sneak up on teams for the first, I don't know, half of the season until they're you know, sitting there in the five slot, which they kind of almost did last year. But it'll be more of a buzz. You know, it'll be more competitive against the high-end teams out there. So Sacramento, we'll talk about some other time. But that, yeah, no, I think, and I think the league has got the memo on Shea as well, just like Tyrese. You know, and Tatum, everybody already knows, you know, what he's all about.
Right. Do you think Indy's making a run at a playoff spot this year?
They got some really screwed up stuff going on out there.
we're all still feeling it from the Isaiah Jackson, Jalen Smith. We're just not going to play you guys situation from last year. But it feels like they want to win this season. At least that's the way
Kevin Pritchard keeps chasing his, like, he's got his draft board. He did this presser after the trade deadline last year, and he was just talking about, like, Jordan Wara and Aaron Nesmith.
Oh, and, you mean power forward Aaron Nesmith?
Yeah. I mean, he just sat there for an hour, and he's just telling people, he's like, yeah, we had him really ranked high on our board, like, really high. You know, we really wanted to get him, and we got him now. And then they bring him in and just drop, you know, 20, 30 minutes on their lap in a situation where you've got players that you've put some, you know, money into a little bit in the case of Jalen Smith. You got this guy in Isaiah Jackson who's just a walking pick and roll bucket and, you know, changing the dynamic, and you're watching him defend out on the perimeter and, you know, make these big plays in high leverage situations, and you're like, oh, you don't want to develop that? You know, bring in Jordan Wara and give him 25 minutes, like, because you didn't get him in the draft? Like, okay. So it's that logic that makes me really wonder what's going on there. And you got Rick Carlisle, who's, you know, older coach, and yeah, he knows more, has forgotten more about basketball than most people on the planet. Get that. But he's really stubborn, you know, and it's like the confluence of those two things. What is your plan, Indy? You know, and then you have Tyrese Haliburton, who to me looks even more athletic. And that was never really part of the equation previously.
Yeah.
You know, the athleticism was just enough to get by. Now you're seeing him in the first step is pretty damn good. And then you add all of the skills on top of it and the shooting. And so if they just cut him loose, let him do his thing, that'll be good. It feels like they're getting out of the Buddy Hield business. Those two have played together a ton, by the way. So it's not necessarily like good riddance, Buddy. You know, Buddy's done some pretty good things for that team. They've got their, you know, Benedict Mathurin that they've got to get, you know, going to some degree, but they've really squandered the opportunity there to develop continuity within key pieces. And so we'll see, you know, power forward, center, you know, Miles Turner's locked in now, you know, what exactly are they going to be doing there? And, you know, they got their rookie. Just a big mishmash. I think they could compete, and I think they will, just based on the Tyrese Haliburton experience. But you know, beyond that, it's can they start pushing the right buttons? Because they've decidedly not pushed the right buttons for the last couple of years. So that's kind of on coach, and I think that's also on management and coach being in the same. They're on the same page. It's just not the right page.
All right. Reminder to everybody, no matter how you're viewing or listening to this show, please rate, like, subscribe in some combination or some order of those three things. You guys know the drill at this point. Brew, let's get into the next shuffle bucket, which is debatable, I suppose. Right now on Yahoo, the 8 through 12 names are Kyrie Irving, Giannis Antetokounmpo, LaMelo Ball, Kevin Durant, and Damian Lillard. And the next couple of names are Anthony Davis, Devin Booker, Domantas Sabonis, Anthony Edwards. Like, it's not clear how far this shuffle bucket actually stretches. But for today's program, because I listed it as a talk about first rounders, we'll go up to 12, because that's how Yahoo's got him. So that's Kyrie, Giannis, LaMelo, KD, and Dame. And I get the feeling that Yahoo's next board reshuffling will probably have Lillard earlier, because now they have an actual home for him. This was when he was moved down, when nobody knew where he's going to be playing. It was seemed likely that he would end up in Miami or just nowhere on opening day. This is a tough spot, and we already talked earlier in the show about how hard it is to be stuck near the back end of the first round. What do you do if you're at pick 8, because your choices are a guy who takes games off for all kinds of reasons, transcendent generational talent whose knees are mush. That's Giannis. Guy who has basically missed like two of his first three NBA seasons because of various ankle things in LaMelo Ball. Obviously a ton of upside there, but very low field goal percent and has not actually been a first rounder per game yet in his career. Kevin Durant, big time injury risk just because he's old. And then Dame, who's like, Damian Lillard feels like picking Mario in Mario Kart, where it's like, well, he's not super fast. He turns okay. His acceleration is fine. But you know he's going to be there. Like, the game says Mario on it, so you know he's going to be in it. What the hell do we do with these five picks? What's the right order, if any?
Excellent Mario Kart reference.
Thank you very much, yeah.
and I think I got in on the Switch version a couple, however many years ago, and it was kind of like too much for me.
My kid is very good at the Switch one, by the way. And he's a young.
Is that the most recent one? Because
Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Can you believe there've been 8 of those? I'll challenge anybody to the Super Nintendo one. That one separates the youths
between
from the
that
grown-ups.
Game and Tecmo Bowl.
Oh,
you might see more fights.
Next time we do a show, bro,
I'm wearing
my Tecmo Bowl t-shirt. I want you to know. Break
you
that out
Tecmo
for
Bowl I want a Tecmo Bowl t-shirt. Somebody send me a Tecmo Bowl t-shirt.
Can I get a sponsorship from tpublic.com? I've given them enough of my damn money over the years. But anyway.
Who made that game, Tecmo Bowl? It's a game company.
I actually don't remember. Maybe I'll run over into the club. I guess I could just look it up on the internet. I was going to go run and grab ours. And then I thought, wait a minute, I'm on the internet. I can do it there. So what the hell do you do, Brew? End of the first round.
Okay, so you mentioned a lot of players. I think Giannis, in a punt scenario, I think you could probably crank him up a bit. Like, yeah, the knees are a major concern. There's going to be games off, but you know, depending on your strategy, punting the turnovers, punting the free throws, you know, you get a real big boost there. I'm good with that. The other players are really interesting. I mean, LaMelo Ball to me is the one that's maybe the most interesting.
Oh, Tecmo, by the way. Tecmo is the company.
That's the company. Yeah, that's right. Because they made a ton of great games back then. There was it Ninja Gaiden?
Was that Tecmo? That's a great game. Tecmo. I don't remember who
made
it.
Yeah, they were the first company to like make kind of cinematic movie kind of stuff within the game.
That was Tecmo. Good call. Confirmed. Yeah, yeah. Ninja Gaiden was Tecmo. Sorry, going at you were talking about LaMelo Ball, and I just jumped in because it hit me that it is Tecmo Bowl.
It's Tecmo for a reason.
Yeah. Sorry. Please continue.
That's how you know it's good.
LaMelo Tecmo Ball.
Yeah, there we go. LaMelo is just, I like for what you said, not being a first round per gamer, and here he is in the back of the first round after the season of really, I mean, just
hell.
I'll own it. I didn't move him down fast enough, you know, after the ankle thing. I was thinking, here's this young guy that probably, recovers like Wolverine, and we should not get overly worried about this thing. And lo and behold, should have been worried. And then you get him re-injuring it on a fan, you know, in one of his first few games back. It was really brutal. So you got to look at that and just ask yourself, like, is this a long-term ankle injury? You know, we've had questions like this for guys like Steph Curry in the past, where it's like, you know, at what point in time can you say you've turned the page on it? And he is younger, and you know, so what's really going on here with this? And the stats he brings to the table warrant the discussion, warrant his placement in this back end of the first round. Is anybody going to feel good hitting that button? You know, you just don't know. Like, I mean, you do have things like Miles Bridges is back in Charlotte, and you know, kind of how does it look once you throw it all together? You know, is he going to get this sort of unfettered usage run license to do whatever? And then you also have this question of what if he improved? I mean, it's totally possible. And what is the evolution of his game? And you know, we got in a sense a very limited set of data on him. It's big enough to get aggressive, as evidenced by his ADP. You know, but here we go again. You know, we're looking at LaMelo Ball in the back end of the first round, and you can't just sort of wipe it off and say, hey, you know, I don't want anything to do with that guy, because the options that you just described, I mean, yeah, Dame's Mario. I think a lot of people will do that, though. You know, they'll look at the two of those And they'll say, man, you know what? I think I know what I'm getting in Dame. I don't know what I'm getting in LaMelo Ball. And that's probably one of those safety versus risk kind of discussions for the first round.
Yeah, I probably go safe, personally.
I mean, there's just a lot of value there for LaMelo. It's a tough one. It's a very tough one. And
but it sounds like you do like the idea of trying to balance whatever you do in the late first round with the second round. So if you go relatively safe in the first, maybe you take a little bit more of a shot early second. If you go a little more risk, LaMelo, even Giannis is a bit risky with the way his knees have been. Or Durant on the injury risk front, then coming back in the second, you looked at, we talked about Domantas Sabonis is an interesting pair there because he does tend to stay on the floor. Other than you mentioned, like if you're in the most hyper competitive, like you got everything's got to click, that's where you maybe shoot the moon. But otherwise, it does seem like you like the idea of kind of pairing a little risk with a little safety.
And then we haven't even talked about this positionality.
Right. You know? There's a boatload of centers this year. They've returned.
There's a boatload of centers. And then also, what if your league has two centers in it? You know, there's just a lot of different variables. And so for me, you know, I'll be looking at my own ranks and my own valuations. And it's not just a straight draft based on the number. Now, you can, don't get me wrong. If you're out there, and especially if you're in a beginner league or if you're in an intermediate league, you could draft by the number and be fine. You know, knock yourself out. It's great. But for me, there's plenty of times where I'll go for the lower rank guy, lower rank valuation, and it's because of build, fit, you know, you name it, risk, reward. That's why this game is so much fun. You know, there's just so many different ways you can play it.
Brew's got 2 minutes before he's got to go. So what does everybody need to know about Sports Ethos draft season?
Sports Ethos draft season is a draft tracker.
Boom. That's one. What else we got?
Well, I think, B1. Obviously you need to get the B150.
There's the other one.
You need to get,
I thought that was going to be first one.
I think the Sports Ethos 360 membership, like people are sleeping on that thing. Like the rates are going to go up, guys, you know, and I think with the proliferation of gaming, you're just going to kind of see just more and more gaming as we go.
You mean like betting gaming? Yeah.
Like betting gaming. Yeah. There's going to be, and our team is very good at this. So like there's the aspect of right now you can currently tail these guys or learn from them and make better plays on your own. And that's just going to become more and more prevalent in the experience. And it's going to be just something you get more and more comfortable with, I think. You know, you don't have to, you know, envision yourself some fancy capper or something like that, but you know, just sitting on your couch watching a game, and pretty soon you're just going to be able to push a button on your phone and like take a bet, you know? And as long as that's something that you're interested in, you know, I think having access to the wager pass is just an incredible tool to learn the game. And I know we're going to be participating in that, you and I, you know, more and more as we go here. And the team's doing a wonderful job. So there's just a ton there. Then you've got the DFS side of that Ethos 360 pass. And what's going to be really fun this year is our projections have been great. Don't get me wrong, but we haven't been able to weaponize them the way that we're weaponizing them this year. Part of that's the participation from Andre Limos. You know, me and him have worked, I've been kind of training him on principles of the B150 and you know, we're working kind of hand in glove on this stuff all season long this year. And so if you're a DFS player, you're going to have access to the best projections out there, bar none. I mean, maybe there's a couple other guys out there who are doing this kind of stuff. I bet there are, but is this stuff being published? Is it public? You know, is it available for purchase? Highly doubt it. These are Vegas grade projections. So whether it's DFS or on the gaming side, if you want to do simple over under stuff, you know, player props, I mean, you're going to just have just an amazing edge against any book, you know, against other players. So that Ethos 360 gets you the DFS pass, it gets you the wager pass, gets you early access to the B150, the earliest access to the B150, and you lock this price in for life. So it's $22 a month right now. It's going up this upcoming season, and it'll be, you know, the best price you're ever going to see on a product like this, you know, many moons from now. you're gonna be kind of laughing. I think we're talking about the gym membership I pay $50 a year for because they grandfathered me in. I don't even go to the gym.
Nope.
And I just keep paying this based on principle.
You're paying it because it feels smart to pay it. That's why.
And so you get early access, you get all those different things. It's just a, to me, that's the best thing going on the site right now.
All right, Brew, get the hell out of here. I know you got an 11 o'clock.
Yes, sir. I'll do that. Good talking with you guys. Bye-bye now.
We're sending Brew off. He's got an 11 o'clock. Now you're stuck with just me. I'll move my face into the middle of the screen for those on YouTube. If you have a question, this would be a great time to throw it in the chat. You guys have been kind of talking to each other over there on YouTube, which I actually enjoy. I read it while I'm doing other stuff. It's hard, man. Thinking back to some of the stuff that Brew and I have talked about on this show over the years, I'm reminded of that he is typically more aggressive than most on draft day. And the fact that even Brew is saying, think about pairing safety with risk in the early, basically the first and second round, tells me all I need to know about risk early. Basically that there's a ton of it, and that even maybe the most aggressive fantasy player in the industry for the last 17 years or whatever it's been for Brew since he linked up with RotoWorld, is still saying this is a time where you want to take a deep breath. Don't shoot the moon unless you absolutely have to, because there's plenty of guys you can get that are great value plays in the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth rounds, and so on. And that keeps your team, if you blow your first two picks and they're both cooked, you're done. You're done at that point. Dem Birds, good question. Could you do a live demo of the draft tracker tool? Yes, I'm trying to figure out how to make that operate properly here on YouTube. What I might do is have Andre on just to talk us through it, because he's the in-house expert on the draft tool. Or maybe I'll just put it up and I'll flip around with it. What I want to be careful of is not... I don't want to give away the B150 rankings, and there is a version of the tool that's built on Yahoo rankings so that you can do projections on that. And then there's a B150 version. As folks get access to that, it gets loaded into the tool. So the answer to your question, Dembirds, is yes, I am going to do a live demo of the Draft Tracker tool at some point. I'll play around with it a little bit, make sure that I can get this thing right. Maybe tomorrow is the day, honestly, because I don't know if you guys remember that I talked about it earlier this week. Tomorrow's Friday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific time, basically right after I eat lunch over here. I'm planning on firing up a YouTube show and just going until people stop talking to me. We're going to talk about everything, anything and everything on that. It's going to be marathon iteration. Hopefully people kind of keep joining as it goes, snowballing a little bit, and we'll just keep like promoting it on the interwebs, and whatever you guys can do to help promote that, that would also be extremely helpful too. What else did I want to get into here right at the tail end? Oh, I remember. So Brew talked a bunch about the Ethos 360. I wanted to let you guys know that if your draft is not for like another week or so, your best deal at Sports Ethos is actually the All Sport Fantasy Pass. That has NFL, MLB, and NBA. So the three big fantasy sports, the sort of the three juggernauts of the industry. You'll get all of our draft boards, including the B150, Joe's baseball ranks. You get the football ranks. That draft guide just passed a couple weeks ago, but you get the in-season NFL content happening right now. All of that is just $7 a month, and the NBA alone is $6 a month. So one extra buck, and you get the other two sports cook juicy right along with it. So that's an excellent deal, and I would certainly suggest you guys go that direction. I'm later on today, it's going to be a little bit jam-packed. I don't know if we're going to be able to fit everything in that I want to do. I really do want to do a mock draft. That's the thing that where there's a time constraint. At 2 o'clock Pacific time, I'll be hopping on with Josh on his channel over on the Locked On side. I think that's a recorded show, so my guess is that'll probably air closer to 3 or 3:30 Pacific time. But that'll be fun, so make sure to check that out. Josh and I will have a little player battle. We're going to be talking about some classic Dan guys versus some, I don't want to say classic Josh guys, just a couple of guys that are sort of the anti-Dans. There's like the Dans and the anti-Dans. That's basically what we're going to be talking about here. Forget exactly the two on each side of that thing. But there's like a few... Oh, I remember. So he has one guy I said was too early, one guy I said was too late. He has two guys, or I picked a couple of guys. I think he said one of my guys was too early and the other one too late, perhaps? I forget. I don't know. Anyway, so check that out. You'll get to see me over there. And then I'm hoping, again, like I said, do a mock in there, but it'll have to be a quick one. It'll be like a 20, 25-minute mock that we'll just kind of smash out in the afternoon. Thank you to the great Aaron Bruschi for jumping on with us here to go through the first round. Next time he and I talk, I want to chat a little second round, because I think a lot of folks feel like that's the absolute toughest part of a draft right now. And Bruschi can talk us through strategy with it. So that should be extremely helpful. He is, of course, at Aaron Bruschi on Twitter. I am at Dan Bespris on Twitter. Our Discord link, let me throw that in the chat room right now. And for those that are listening to the podcast, that's going to be in the description, so you can get that there. And the Sports Ethos buy page is not in the show's description. That's an oversight on my part. I'll throw that in the chat room, and I'll try to fix the description as soon as I get off air here as well. We just picked up a bunch of new viewers right at the tail end of the show. Sorry, guys. We're actually at the end here. Crossed the one-hour mark. It's time for me to go stretch my back. I'm at that part of the year. YouTubers can see it behind me that I have a heating pack on my back because I'm in my seat all the time right now, just watching NBA news flash by, tweeting, podcasting, and just generally having a damn good time, but my back is not having a damn good time. Thanks, everybody who's been subscribing to our YouTube page as well. This has been an unbelievable stretch of growth for the Sports Ethos YouTube side. You guys are awesome. I think that'll be it for here. And I might see you back on this channel later today, but I'll see you somewhere. Catch you over on social. So long, everybody.